What was done to him was wrong. I think it put massive strain on our friendship for the next 2 or 3 years. We got off the coach straight to a fucking mud puddle. And they're fucking got the white trim and they're dancing around. I thought, fucking brilliant. Welcome to fucking Morley. We got sacked because they didn't like us. But I look at that and go, that was a decision took very early for me. We were so tunnel visioned on each game. Win.
Yeah.
Train. Win. The standards set themselves. Boost the budget at Chester in that third season, raised more money than the football club did. Beers. The guy stopped and brought a traffic cone on the coach and just went, goo, 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 all the way down. We've literally come out of the club there and you were playing Kendall away. It was a game when Scholesy and Phil Neville took charge. I think you won 2-0. So it was a Saturday game. So we came down. So we stood behind. Remember where the cars used to park behind the goal?
Yeah.
The far end. We stood there, me, Byrne, Glenn, Karen. So we've not even talked about money, anything. Karen came over and she went, what do you want? And I went, well, this is what we get off Rami. And she went, all right, well, that's what we're going to give you. We went, right, fine, sound. So all this bullshit and nonsense, he'll tell you, I'll get to the point of what they were getting paid, the Rami lads, compared to fucking you lot. Got to the point of, we took the exact same wage on my children's lives as what we got paid at Rami. It was the opportunity. Yeah. Even though we were dropping a league.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were fifth with Rami in that league. We dropped to fucking fifth with Salford in that league for the opportunity of seeing the bigger picture. Yeah. We hadn't spoke to Gary, to Phil, to Scholesy, Giggs. We hadn't spoke to anyone. It was just a chance, knowing that type of players you had as well. So we stood behind the goal and the fucking camera comes over. And I remember, I'm like, oh, fucking hell, have a bit of this. And Burns like fucking hiding.
Burns pissing his pants.
So, and then they came, you won 2-0 then. Phil and Scholesy came around and shook hands. Brilliant to have you on board. Congratulations. Do you want to come to the change room and say anything? And we're going, yeah, we better add cameras are fucking on. It's dark because it's winter, so the lights are shining on you. Goes in the change rooms and pops the head down. Yous are all bouncing because you've just won. And I remember saying, lads, we're not going to make you better individuals, but I promise you we'll make you a better team. I think that was me opening gambit. And I thought, fuck, it's not bad that.
Yeah. Didn't plan that at all.
And as I've looked, you were sat, I think you used to sit in the corner around the side of the door. And I were looking at webs. And he just like was nodding, going, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. So, fucking hell, I've got him on side already. And that was it, done. We fucked off after that. And then we trained the Tuesday, Thursday. But
what did you feel like you had to do when you came in?
Get them lads on board straight away because you locked in.
The Rami lads.
Yeah, because it's easy saying the four lads. I'm just trying to think who we kept on board from the Jay Lynch was there, but was injured. Remember the goalie? You, Linney, Jason Jarrett, and was there another one?
Webbs,
fucking hell, Webbs, yeah. That was it. That's all we wanted to work with. That was nothing against anybody else. It was just that our players all played where the rest of them did.
Yeah.
Cavill Koo stayed for a little bit, I think. Remember Cav, back?
Yeah.
And that was one of our first problems, you see. So that game that we came to watch, what Scholesy and Phil Neville managed, Sadiq El-Fattouri made his debut.
That's right. Remember? Yeah.
So
the lad who went to Man United.
Yeah. So they went, what do you think? And we went, well, it's January. He's a good player, but we need different lads who can defend and run. And they're looking at us as if to go, but we've got him in on trial at United and you don't want him. We went, well, we do want him, but Cavill Koo's going to play.
Yeah.
And they couldn't fucking wrap their head around it. They were looking at us as if to go, what the fuck have we brought in here?
Yeah.
So Cav, who was an unbelievable 1v1 defender, top player, weren't great on the ball by his own admission, but as a 1v1 defender, he was outstanding. And then we had Lynch here. And then we brought our lads in from Rami. So Alson came in, Gaz Stopfer, Scott Burton.
Not till
the year after. And Owen Roberts come the year after. Oh, no, Owen came in, didn't he?
Yeah.
Owen came in, remember, left back?
Yep.
Gaz, Scott, Jordan, Spenno.
Yeah.
And then we signed Adam Morning. Another fucking
Sorry
cannon.
About that.
Another cannon. Who else do we bring? So that's what we brought
in. Do you remember when you brought him in and we were sat at opposite sides at dressing room?
We're by the bridge.
That was a bit weird.
So we come to our first game.
And I'd snapped Dootsy's arm and he just walked in.
Yeah, so we played. Yeah. So we had no keeper. So we brought Dootsy in, whose arm he broke. And I remember Baba Bridge's changing room was set up in a way where when you walk in, there's a bench here and then round the corner's another bench.
Yeah.
I walk through the door and you've got all the Salford lads on one side and all the Rami. But Webbs had sat with the Rami lads. So Webbs was sat in the middle of the Rami lads. But it was like a fucking, no one's talking.
No, it was weird.
He might have tried a few of your fucking cringy jokes.
Yeah, I did.
And
the lad, like Scott Burton, were looking at him. And I remember spotting him nudging. I can't remember if he was like Gaz Spencer's or like that. And I saw him go, You know, like,
yeah,
what a knobhead. I spotted him go like, what a knobhead.
But it was mad that, weren't it? So it was like a face-off of both yeah. sides. Bearing in mind, we'd had that scrap 2 weeks earlier well, like between both sides. Sam Medley was still there as well.
Yeah.
So we won the first game 2-0. Now, out of that, if you remember that season, so we came in, I think we were a few games in hand, not on the top, but on like a couple of both. We had to win practically every game. We won 15 out of 16.
I'm not just saying it were miles better when you came back in, because no disrespect to Phil Power. We weren't scared of him. We weren't bothered.
Yeah. Did your own things, essentially.
We did his own thing, and there were too many voices in the dressing room. And he would, like, Phil wouldn't hardly say anything, and he would look to me and Danny Webber to stand up and say things.
Yeah.
And there were no fear factor at all. And then you guys came in, and that just totally changed.
Well, it's funny if you use that word, fear.
It was a standard.
Because how I used to look at it was, there was a fine line between respect and fear. Now, when I started managing, people didn't respect me because they didn't know me to respect me. You didn't respect me. When I walked through that changing door, you might have gone, oh, he's a fucking scary character, or oh, he's done well at Rami. But you didn't respect me, you didn't know me.
No, I didn't.
You got to earn respect both ways. So my go-to emotion was, these are the fucking standards. If you don't meet them, you will not play, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Now that's essentially a threat. So I'm trying to scare you into making sure you're playing standards.
I'll admit, it took me a while to buy into it.
Yeah.
Because, like, I do always think as a manager, like, you have to be fearful of your manager. I feel like you have to.
Yeah.
Like, I know it might, like, there's different ways of being fearful. Like, if you don't reach your standards, you drop, you're out of the team. There's,
you want it to be business, don't you?
Of course you do. Yeah. And we never had that before you and Burn came in. And it did take a while to buy into it, because we'd had 6 months of not having it.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden,
you got yourself to a place in the league just because you had good players.
Yeah.
And again, it's not having a pop at anybody previously. It's just what I found with little guidance. We were told by Gary on our first meet, he was abroad, and we had a Zoom call in his old place, Young Street, wherever it used to be. Scholes who were there, Phil were there, Karen, me, but, and he did one of his calls on the TV and that. And he said, don't worry about next season. He said, get in the playoffs, have a good run to it, but find out what you want for next year, and then next year we'll have a go at it. And I remember going, what the fuck are we doing?
Did you come in and think we can win this league?
Yeah, I remember thinking, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Really? Is that what we won this league last year, won promotion from this league last year, beating Darlow 3 times.
Yeah.
There's nothing to, so as it transpired, we had to win 15 of our last 16 games.
Which is mad, isn't it?
It's fucking mad. But we were so tunnel visioned on each game, win.
Yeah.
Train, win. The standards set themselves, because we didn't think about next year or 2 years, or we weren't looking at depth charts and things that they're doing now. It was just about catching Darlow up. Now,
I don't want to bring it up, but I scored 18 and 16 when you
unbelievable came. What you did. Just when you, just apart from when you decided to go abroad on your modelling thing.
Yeah. What did you think about that?
Do you not look back now and think, why the fuck did I go?
No, at all.
So you just asked me what I thought, and here's the thing, right?
That pays my mortgage.
At the time, I thought it was a disgrace, because the expectation from me and Burn was to have the buy-in for every game. When I look back now, that was your job.
Yeah.
No different to your job, or you didn't have one on a Friday night with me on the Spuds.
30 quid.
But it was no different to Burn working on a building site and not being able to get to a game because of work.
Yeah.
But that's looking back. But if I'd have shown any sort of weakness towards it, what we didn't want was players thinking, oh, right, okay, well, Seds can do it, then I can do it as well.
No, and I get that now.
Yeah.
At the time, I was like, why are they all having a go at me?
But the best thing was, and I remember someone saying to me recently, oh, what's that documentary? I bet you were pissed off when you dropped him and come on and scored. I went, you fucking stupid. I was pissed off that he came off. I said, just think about what you just said to me. He was dropped because he went away. What I called an holiday when you were working.
Yeah.
Put on the bench, came on and won us a fucking game.
Well, I remember.
Why are they pissed off, you silly?
Before the game, though, like, it never showed it on TV, but you pulled me to one side and you went, I'm dropping you. And I was like, yeah, I know. And he was like, but be prepared, because I want you to come on, like, and you might be my match winner. And I on my kid's life, that's what you said to me.
Yeah.
But you said, I have to drop you.
There's nothing personal.
I have to drop you. And I was like,
it weren't personal.
At the time, I was thinking, drop me out.
Are you mad? I'm your best player. Yeah,
I'm the best player.
Listen, you're.
But now, I'm a bit older, and you look back from the outside. Absolutely, you had to drop me.
But me looking back, I'm looking back and going, that was fucking harsh. Not even still, I probably still made the same decision, but would have understood why you did what you did, and I didn't really. Now,
well, that one trip was basically 12 weeks wages at Salford, which is a lot of money, isn't it?
You don't give a fuck what I think. It's your job, you've got a family to feed. And again, it's all hindsight.
It's when what people need to understand as well is the documentary is made for that.
Of course
that.
It is. And made for that. Here's the thing.
They never had the arm around the shoulder said, I'm going to drop you, pal. You have to do
what that. They loved was the bit where we were with Ash Dunn, who's an absolute diamond and was a top player.
Yeah.
Right. And he said to us, why?
That was harsh how it was portrayed.
It was awful.
Yeah. Right.
And it was, the reason why, forgetting the cameras there, the reason why is because Gaz Stopforth and Scott Burton, in our opinion, is better than you. Yeah. Now, the way it was portrayed, I said what I said, Burton said what he said, but the way it was portrayed was if we've gone, you're fucking rubbish on your ways. He was a good player that we tried to sign previously. He was an absolute diamond of a fucking man.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that and thinking, what the fuck are you? What are you trying to create?
Why have you betrayed us?
Done that? That was the first time where, not cringe or anything like that, I thought I was mad. I was pissed off. But if you ever went back and watched it all to now, and it's fucking rubbish now. It's so boring compared to when we all did.
Yeah,
because it was more like a show. Even though we was all being who we were, it was done in a way. There was a constant something happening all the time.
Yeah.
It was like a fucking. It was like a drama. Whereas now. They do it like football, watch them train, watch them eat.
Yeah. No, but it was
boring.
It was the heroes and villains.
Of course it was. It was just and how that's why at prime time at 9 PM on BBC One, when it had millions of viewers, they did what they did and why they did it. Now what people again forget is how it fucking worked out for the owners of the Salford and us was incredible.
Yeah.
The first showing was on a Thursday night. The night after was our FA Cup first round game against Notts County live on TV. If you're a businessman, forget that the football people, if you're a businessman and you're creating a documentary, nothing gets any better than that. The exposure they got, not just on the Thursday, but then us then beating Notts County the night after was incredible. So the way we came across as characters in a show, the reality is, and you both worked with us, you've only, to be fair, worked with us whilst the documentary's been on. You've been at three clubs. We've been the exact same since minute one. So now we tried to change our ways of coaching and managing and different things. But in terms of what that camera shows, when it's in the changing room and not in the changing room, we're the same people. Do you get what I mean by that?
Yeah, yeah.
So what they'll do is, we talked about it before, I think it was off camera, where they're going, oh, well, is this and is that, and what a fuck you, oh, I wouldn't put up with that. So some bloke says to me, he goes, you won't speak to me like that. Well, what would you do? What would you do if I did speak to you like that? Well, yeah, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't do anything. Just the same as no player's ever done anything from day one till now, because it comes from a good place. It's not a personal attack. Again, I might say something, it bites me on the ass, and you go, now you're wrong here. Me and Burn have never fallen out with a player. There's not one player in 15 years of management that we've ever fallen out with, that we ignore each other when we walk past on the street. I still speak to every single player.
Well, people,
Kebby.
But even Kebby messaged me the other day.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Joking aside,
and
we probably embarrassed him a little bit. He probably embarrassed himself by taking the wrong bag.
Yeah.
And having to come in during a tea talk. Do you remember that?
Tell us that story then. Tell us that story because I forgot about that.
So but now played, what, played. No, what did he do to get... Has he sent a text to somebody?
In what way would you mean the text?
He sent a text to Alison saying the managers don't know what they're doing. And
so what happened was...
And we'd found
out. Yeah, we found out. And we pulled him out. And we went, what have you got to put... Bear in mind, at that point, even you guys, we've been with you for 18 months, 12, 18 months. Yeah. So even the lads that we inherited...
We was all having the
was all You were all pals now.
Yeah.
And you've got a lad who's come in a bit of a lot, and he was a great kid, right? Because if I didn't think he was a great kid, I'd say, nay, I'm not bothered. I don't have any ears and graces. He was a good kid. But remember, he changed.
Yeah,
I don't know what there was, somewhat externally was being pushed. It was a bit of a bizarre situation, really. And I'm not talking about owners, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm talking about from his side. So Alson went, listen, we might have a bit of a problem here. Because you're a bit of a fucking unelected captain, weren't you?
Grass, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a grass. is what he was. An unelected captain. Stitches he was get, a fucking grass.
Yeah, stitches get stitches out.
So he'd go, oh, we might have a bit of a problem.
I love that. Unselected captain. No, it was my
that ball.
It was my grass in the changing room.
Yeah, it's my little mole. Big mole. And he got, we might have a problem on our hands. So he told us, so we pulled him out. We went, why have you done that? And he's going, oh, well, I didn't mean that. Well, you did. You knew exactly what now you've been caught red-handed.
Yeah.
Just be a man. Hold your hand. So we went, okay, I shouldn't have done it. Goes, yeah, get your bag and you're done. You're finished. That was it. Yeah. We don't need to discuss it. You've done a certain thing. We didn't like what you'd done. There'd been a build to it as well. Get your bag and off your pop.
Yeah.
So goes in, gets his bag, fucks off.
We're on the dressing room. We know that he's just been sacked.
I'm leaning on the door. Burns talking. The door starts fucking going behind me and I think, and that gets me mad. It's one of the worst things that gets me. And he pops his head in the door and he went, I've got the wrong bag. He had to walk back from the changing room.
His bag was at the other end,
near Bernard's feet. Get his bag and then walk back out. It was fucking horrible.
And then there was another one where
as soon as he walked out,
everyone started
and he must have thought, oh no, what have I done?
Everyone started laughing.
It was fucking horrible. But
backs me up now.
The point I was saying was we never fell out with anyone. But if you believe the hype on the documentary, and you can only believe what you see if you don't know how it's edited.
Yeah.
Which was to make it a watchable TV show, heroes and villains,
drama.
Then you think, fuck me, how does anyone like them two?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But the reality is that what goes on in our changing room, or our intensity is a lot different to a lot of other people's, but in reality, that happens in most changing rooms. What you do is you find out about people and you look at them and you go, and I can look at a lad, I can see his body language. I know if I fucking give it him on a pitch, he got it on Tuesday night.
Reaction.
The fucking reaction you get off him is incredible. You don't have to constantly do it, but it's just, you might be doing a certain thing, like gobbing off at the fucking ref. So I'll turn on him.
It's not like you.
So I'll turn on him, and then the 10-minute reaction you get out of him is incredible.
Yeah.
You can do that with a player, and this is the art of management, is you can do that with a player, the wrong player, crumble. And they've gone. You might as well take them off.
Yeah.
So Mickey's someone that like me and Bern know well now and speak to and have done work with. He's somebody that I look up to. Idolise is a word that I'm exaggerating, but I look at and go, I remember him taking a Fleetwood job. I remember him going through the leagues with him. We want to do what you've done.
Yeah.
And rather than being silly and going, Sir Alex Ferguson, Jurgen Klopp, you have to look at people, peers, and go, how do we do what he's done?
Yeah.
How's he done that? His level of intensity is incredible. I think mine's good, but look at his.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I
think the biggest thing for me, it weren't fake. You weren't copying off of Mickey Meldon or somebody else and saying
it was our version.
It was just your version.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the same characteristics that underlined it were exactly the same as what I really liked. But at the time, I was 35. I was coming to Salford as like a retirement thing. And you came in and I was like, fuck.
Do I need this?
I don't need this.
100%. And then you've got lads 15 years younger than you going, this is what we used for the last 2-3 years.
But then you bought into the lads who came in. And actually then we went to fifth and then we're winning, then winning and winning. And me and Webbs were like, and we're scoring, and we're playing well. All of a sudden you get that hunger back. You think, win the league here.
But then Webbs was loving it, wasn't he?
You go back. So that shows,
and I'm not just blowing smoke at you, right? That shows how good you and Bernard were. Danny Webber played for Man United, played Champions League, played Championship, and he loved the way that you two manage.
Yeah, it's nice that
team.
I used to get embarrassed with stuff like that.
So if you were nonsensical and shouting and bulking and had no clue about tactics, formations, how to manage lads, Danny Webber wouldn't have bought into it.
Well, you get outed by him.
Of course you would.
They'd go, listen.
But he loved it. He stayed on after me, didn't he?
Yeah, so we'll go back to that year, and then you got injured. You had your injury.
Yeah.
When you scored the goal in the semi. So it's mad that you scored the goal in the semi. You scored the goal in the final. That got us promotion. But that was my favourite year in football because you was injured. I'm trying to think what year it was for 2014. I think it was 15-16. So we won promotion through the playoffs. We had the FA Cup run. People forget, we got into the FA Cup third round draw because we drew with Hartlepool on the Friday night. The draw was done on the Sunday or Monday. We played the replay.
The replay. Yeah, yeah.
We knew we were playing Derby at home. Derby then played Man United at home. In the fourth round.
Imagine that.
Fucking hell. Well, Derby had come to us. Do you remember our pitch? How bad it were.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget that day when we played Notts County, which is well documented. And I remember Alan Smith, Roy Carroll, all getting off the coach. And I remember, not none of them two, they meant business, but there were a couple of fucking lads. What was he called? John Stead. And another lad, I can't remember his name, centre forward of Gooden. Anyway, they got off the coach straight into a fucking mud puddle. And they're fucking got the white trim and they're dancing around. I thought, fucking brilliant. Welcome to fucking Morley. Because they're thinking, what are we doing here? We've all been there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you see a pristine ground and pitch.
I've done it myself. When I played league and then you go to a non-league ground, you think, what is this?
But you know you've won mentally.
This is crap.
You know you've won mentally. And we fucking ran all over them. And that season was the year that Darlow won it. Now, Darlow beat us twice. Which fucking hurt because they only ever beat us. Me and 20 games, Darlow have only ever beat us four times, and two of them were in that season. But what you got to remember then, them two games is two of them games they beat us in the last minute. They're not like beat us 3-0 and 3-0. They beat us losing. I hated it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was you look back to the games and go, we should have won them. Do you know what I mean?
A little bit of tiredness from all the games.
100% he caught up with us. Now the Darlow rivalry. Me and again still talk about with Burn now. Without Darlow. I'm not quite sure if we'd have hit the heights we wanted to get to. As managers, as a team, I don't think Salford would have got to where it got to as quick as it did without Darlington. So because of Manor Bird's rival with Darlow before we got to Salford, it escalated then.
Because
we went as title challenges both seasons, three seasons.
You push each other, don't you?
Of course you fucking do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's back in the day with Arsenal and United. You used to push each other all the time. Yeah. Same again with City and Liverpool. We had the same with Darlow. And the respect I've got with a lot of the Darlow fans now, he's incredible.
Yeah.
We end up managing a local rival at Spennymoor.
Yeah.
But in the old days with them, it was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
They were awful.
Oh, they hated us,
didn't they? What they didn't realise what they was doing was they go, oh, it's your cup final. Well, no, it wasn't. We didn't used to speak about you. It was your cup final because your supporters got so excited about coming to Salford and beating Burn and Jono and beating fucking Salford and beating Ramy that all you forgot about supporting your team.
Yeah.
You forgot about making it a place that
do you not, do you not think that every team we were their cup final?
Of course.
So we're all
not now.
No.
So back in the day when we, and it's not a Burn and Jono thing or your team's thing. Back then you would go to places. We played Workington, right? In that same season, away from home, December time, Pooley played left back. We were down to the bare bones. We won 5-2 or something like that. Scott scored a worldie. We turn up, that's Salford City, not the owners or anyone like that. So this team that everyone's seen on TV, 1,500 are there.
Yeah.
Where was everyone's... So the fucking pressure that the team was constantly under was absolutely incredible.
And then go and win incredible. 15 out of 16.
It was fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And that was every year, by the way. Even up right up to the National League North, where you're playing big guns, you were still cup finals. The fans will pretend it weren't, but it fucking was.
Yeah.
Oh, let's do these lot. They're all on a grand a week. It was a load of bullshit. It was a narrative they all created so that if they failed, well, it's all fabricated money from the Salford owners.
Yeah. I used to say, who's on a grand a week? Because I'm not.
It was only me.
You weren't far off. But even then, here's a story. Oh, you must be paying Garrison. Lee Gaskell was getting paid more than you at Darlow. How do I know? Because he's our best mate.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford him. We could have done it if the owners wanted to. The owners didn't see the value for money in him, which we understood. He was on more money at Darlow
than I was at Salford.
But that the narrative doesn't work.
What was he on double mile?
Four times more than
which is.
But when you think about the lads that came from Ramy, they all went on to about 40 quid a week more. Me and Burn took the same wage. These got 40 quid a week more because their thoughts, the owners, was we brought you in to bring lads from a level above who are on less money. We've got our players in from the levels above. We don't need any more.
Yeah.
We've got Sedden, we've got Webber, we've got these lads. We now want lads that are prime for that league, but they're not worth the same money in their minds as what you lot are. Yeah. There will be time. So lads weren't on nowhere fucking near the nonsense that was spoke about. They were paid well because they were good players.
Yeah.
But people create a narrative for Salford and Man and Burners John. Man and Burners John, that's weird. Man and Burners team.
Me, myself, and
yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
Literally body, same person.
Fucking weird that. And but people use that narrative and it's a comfort blanket you see. So that when we beat them, which we always did, they go, ah, well, it doesn't matter. They're all fucking mega money. Ask my wife if we're all fucking mega money.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't meet reality.
You guys were still working.
Of course we were.
Still working.
All the way through.
Yeah.
I was in the overdraft. Fucking skint up. Yeah.
That's your lifestyle.
How did you find it with Gary in the class of 92? And was it because he's very intense in it himself, Gary?
Let's have it right. The reason we took the job was because of them, right? I thought...
That hurts a little bit. For,
yeah.
Not working with me.
Fuck.
I thought that we'd get more out of them. And what I mean is, I'm talking about... to be fair, you had a good relationship with Gary, right? I thought we'd get more out of them in the sense of experience, helping us on the training ground.
Yeah.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? What about this is how I learn. There was none of that. Now, the reason that there was none of that is because Gary was, you're the managers. We don't want to, it was the opposite. So yeah. What I thought would happen, he thought the opposite. He thought, I've been in the gym and we felt power. Yeah. I've done that. You're the managers, let them manage. And I loved it, right? I personally loved it. But there were certain things that were, that as time went on, there where they, I thought, it might be paranoia. You got the impression that they were thinking, why they're not fucking listening to us? Why they're not doing that? Or why are they doing this? He's not good enough. So there'd always be an issue with one of our players that had won you two promotions. And it was like, when we fail, we'll fail. We'll fall on our swords. When the players aren't good enough, it is nothing to do with that. I like him. When he's not deemed good enough, he was another, what happened with him was a disgrace. Him leaving Salford the way he left Salford was a fucking disgrace. And it's one of the things that haunts me as a manager. Always has. It shouldn't have happened the way it did. But it was the way it was.
You got offered a pro, didn't you?
Signed it.
Signed it, and then he got taken away. Yeah.
Not just him. There was a few. There was two or three of them: Billy Priestley, Sam Walker, Brad Barnes, and then all of a sudden over the summer. So we get promoted after that year. You left. You finished. You retired.
Yeah.
We get promoted, and we had a year still part time. Nationally North. We had a fucking great side. Another great year. We got beat on penalties. It was our only failure at Salford. Played Halifax, a big ex-league club. You know, you played for them. Got beat on penalties.
Missed it. We should have won it.
Missed
every pen as well.
You miss yours?
No, I didn't have one.
We had the best penalty you could ever fucking have. They all missed. Sam Walker, Richie Allen, James Poole, incredible footballers. All penalty takers, all missed. Ugh. But they're in that big terrace where there's about fucking 2,000, the noise.
Shea Endy or something, is it?
Sam Johnson, I think the keeper was. He's a fucking massive man. And he just filled the net. And he saved every pen. And they won. Fair play. They deserve to win. So we were unlucky that year. It was our only block. And that was, bearing in mind, Fylde were in our league. They won the league.
Yeah.
Full time. So a kiddie were in there full time. They finished second. So I think it was his third or fourth. So the year after, we goes full time. So the end of that season, he gets pulled in, but we're full time. They offers me and Byrne full time deals. And we upped and hard for a while because the money they paid us to be full time managers was fair. It was probably above what we should have got. However, what you've got to take into account is, as part-time managers and full-time workers, you're paying us less than them two combined. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think people understand that. So they offered us, there was nothing wrong with the basic wage they paid us. I had no issue with that. But I think
Was less than you was on with your job and
Burn was losing like 15 grand a year. What other walk of life would you walk away from 15 grand a year? The answer is you wouldn't.
I didn't know that. That's a lot of money.
15 grand a year, right?
Wow.
So, and he had to pack working. I lost out by a couple of grand. That was it.
Yeah.
But it was a dream for us both. So we took the job. Now, when we took the job, we explained that situation. We signed up to it. No problem. I then don't care what you get or you get, because I'm happy with what I've got. So get Jordan done, get all these lads signed up to do deals. Phoenix signed, Scott Burton signed. We only needed little incremental improvements because we just missed out and everything changed. We weren't told anything. Chris Casper came on board probably a month or two before the end of the season. New sporting director, great guy, by the way.
Yeah.
As a man, Chris Casper, I love spending time with him. He's a great fella. He was put in a very difficult position where he was basically a mouthpiece in terms of his role.
Yeah.
So instead of the people he used to speak to, we now had someone extra in the middle, and it's like, why have you changed that relationship we've had? Have we done something wrong? You almost felt like a naughty kid. Like, what the fuck's going on here? So
I suppose from the outside as well, though, you could look at it is that they'd always been at clubs where
absolutely
that's the chain of command. The owners, you've got the sporting director, chief exec, then it goes, you know, and that's always...
Well, the other side of it is, when's the right time for them then? At some point, they had to implement it.
Yeah.
Didn't they?
Yeah, of course.
Unfortunately for them, they've got their ex-player coming in, their teammate, who's now coming to a position. If they wanted to work that way, which they've continued to do so, the poor guy... I'm not talking Chris, I'm talking about the role, had to be implemented at some point. And they felt that was the right time.
Yeah.
So everything changed. So we've got this director of football, and we've got a new analyst, Ross Duncan, came in, who's still at the club now. Fabulous at recruitment. But everything changed in terms of recruitment over a two-week period. So we're planning with the lads that we've already got and wanting to add two or three that we'd seen the previous season. So the likes of Nick Horton, the likes of, who else do, who were we talking to at the time? Ibu Touré, who was at Nantwich. And everything changed. We got the big hitters. We got Jack Redshaw came in, fantastic football player. Liam Hogan came in, all good players. But the ones we wanted to bring were Kalpi Ajani, Ibu Touré, I think Big Manny, the centre forward. Probably four or five lads what to bring in. We ended up having a turnover of
and
players.
And this is only National North, remember? You've just missed out on penalties.
On penalties.
So you're only having to tweak a few players
we thought we
to
did.
Try and win
it. Bear in mind, we beat Fylde 5-0 towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
Who blitzed the league. We weren't far off. But it needed changes. We had to get better. But we knew what we wanted to bring in. Different types of player. But it all exploded. The recruitments changed and it was a rush. And it was like, fucking hell. Okay.
Do you think that was a bit of a panic because of the expectations of the club?
Yeah.
You wanted
Listen, you've got to remember, we don't know what's going on in the board meetings. We don't know what's going on over in Singapore. And we don't know what's being said. Yeah. That's none of our business. Our business is to manage the team. But we've come from a background of, we pick the fucking players that we want to bring in because we're going to be working with them. And by the way, the lads that they brought in were fabulous fucking guys. Loved them to bits. Still speak to them all now. But it changed everything for us. And it changed everything because things like Jordan, who was living the dream, been given an opportunity, I think he was anyway, given an opportunity on a professional deal on money that we had to fucking convince him to sign on, which was wrong in the first place, which was slightly better than what he was probably getting part-time. You're thinking, this don't feel right, this. And we was basically told certain players have to leave the football club. It weren't a personal attack on Jordan. It was that they wanted to get the other players in. So by Jack Redshaw coming in.
It's all about
in,
budget, isn't it?
Excuse me. Of course it was.
He needs to come off.
Of course it does.
For him to come on.
Of course.
I didn't have a fucking clue about this at the time.
It's a slider. So he comes out and he goes on and things keep moving. So we wanted Manny. Jack Redshaw came in. Anthony Dudley came in. Jake Beasley came in. Mike Phoenix was at the club. Jordan Hume was at the club. He's got to go. He's got to leave. Well, what do you mean he's got to leave? He's played practically every game. He's been part of fucking two promotions and two at Ramy. He's our fucking boy. We never said that at the time, but that's how me and Ben were feeling. You got to remember how close we were to him. Now, he's been dropped more than any other player, by the way, by me and him. So when I'm talking about sentimental stuff here, just because he's someone that we found at 18, 19-year-old and brought him through doesn't mean he gets away with anything. In fact, we're probably harder than him than anyone else because he understands the standards. But what was done to him was wrong. And I might be speaking out of turn, he might disagree, but I think I'm right. I think it put massive strain on our friendship for the next two or three years. You've got to remember, he's one of his best pals is Bernard's brother.
Yeah.
So he spends a lot of his time at Bernard's mum's house. So we're going for a brew, and he'd be fucking sat there in his ultra-tracky on the couch. And he's not that type of guy, is he?
No, but
it put a strain on things.
Yeah.
It put a strain on I didn't like it.
So when that started to happen, did you feel like you was on borrowed time?
Listen, I'll tell you a quick story. Well, they never quit with me. Short story long. There was a book. So during the documentary, they brought a book out. Rob Draper. Do you remember Rob Draper following us? What a fucking man he is. I still speak to him now. He's like a big England correspondent. And he came on board. Anyway, he wrote the book. So the book came out and it was off the back of the documentary and gets the book like I do and a fucking big chapter on me being in the army and all the little bits. And a fucking
did you have to do audio?
Big chapter on fucking SEDS, which I fucking
skipped.
I pulled the pages out. And I get to this page and it started going on about how Gary and Karen and I don't know who else went around the country looking at football clubs that had been through the leagues, the infrastructure. Fleetwood were one. I think Wimbledon were one. FC United were one. And it gets to a page and Gary's explained to Rob what Andy Pilliard told him when he'd asked him for advice. And Andy Pilliard said, every manager will have a plateau season. When they do, get rid of them. I read this fucking page. In my head, that was a threat, a warning. It was a fucking beacon. I took a picture, sent it to Ben. I went, have you seen that? And he's gone, wow, you're mad. And I've gone, no, but just read it for us. And he's
because that'll stick in people's heads as well.
Telling you, if anyone, it's in that page. So they weren't an attack on us. It didn't mention us.
No.
But to me, what was going on was they were getting ready in case we ever had a plateau season. Here's the fucking kicker. There never was one. We never plateaued. So that last season that we had when Chris came.
Did that spur you on more when you read that?
Yeah. It's hard to. My biggest attribute is my energy and my intensity, right? I'm talking about me, not Burn. They're my biggest attributes. It went through the fucking roof. It was like I'd had a fucking ecstasy tablet. I was fucking ready to go, right?
Yeah.
Or constantly, and I'd keep reminding people, oh, we can't battle. And it's just how I was. I can't have him outworking me. Instead about Mickey, I was looking at Mickey, seeing what he was doing. I was looking at manager, got a client, Neil Young at Chester at the time, watching what he was doing. Liam Watson at Southport, promotion after promotion. I put him on fucking pedestals. So you had a target on your back.
You to learn from 100%. Them as well. Yeah, yeah.
But I also know those people behind us. Your Steve Cunningham's coming through. Your Michael Clegg's coming through. They're doing it with us.
Yeah, yeah.
I never, ever rested on my laurels. So I read that fucking page. Even now, it's still highlighted. It's fucking there on my bookshelf.
You can imagine, can't you?
I promise you. So that last season, you watched the documentary of the last season. At Christmas, we were 9 points clear. Bearing in mind, Harrogate Town are full-time going up against us. Stockport in the league, Yorker in the league, Kiddie are full-time, everyone. It's the hardest it's ever been, that league, right?
Yeah.
So we're going toe-to-toe with Harrogate full-time us. Beats them both times. Halfway through the season, bang on halfway, 21 games. For some reason, the documentary kicks in. They're not bothered about the previous half where we were 9 points clear at Christmas. They did have a game in hand, but we were 9 points clear. We're averaging something like 2.3 points a game or 2.4 points, something ridiculous,
yeah.
Ridiculously high. Second half of the season, the documentary starts there. We lost it against FC United. Scott Burton gets sent off, two yellows. We then play FC United away. Scott Burton gets sent off, two yellows. All tackles. Scott was an aggressive, you both know him personally, yeah, yeah. But a great kid. Gets sent off. We drew it. Or vice versa. We either drew one and lost one, but that's what happened.
We got sent off both games.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the bounce. But the ban hadn't kicked in because they were so close at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we play Stockport away, 2-1 down. We equalise it last minute. We play Darlow away, beat them, 1-0. We then lost two on the bounce away at Brackley Town and York fucking City at Boven Crescent. Oh. Two of the hardest places to go. 2-1, 1-0. Right? We gets pulled into a meeting. If you don't win your next three games, me, Burn, Chris, Karen, no cameras. Never cameras on these ones. You're sacked. I thought, I promise you, hand on my heart, I thought it was a new contract. I thought it was a new contract.
Did you?
Yeah. And I remember just thinking.
You still top at league?
Yeah. They were catching. They had a game in hand anyway. I think they were a point behind us.
Right.
Or they might have gone a point above when we had a game in hand.
Yeah.
That's football. That's how football works. Yeah. There's an opposition trying to stop you from fucking winning, Gaz. It's not just us against no one.
Yeah.
Against a top side, by the way.
Well, look where they are now.
Exactly. Yeah. They've gone all the way through with Salford.
Yeah.
Not that they'd know that at the time. They might. They,
yeah, yeah.
So there's an argument for both sides. And then they sit there thinking, is this for fucking real? After what the fuck we have done for your football club, I'm sat in a meeting.
Did you say this?
Probably that and more, yeah. We hit the roof. Anyway, we did what they told us to do. And then we went and won another five.
So you won like eight on the bounce?
Something. And then we played Kiddie away. Everyone's fucking come down, aren't they? Gary's all entourage have come down. And to be fair, they've come down because we're doing well-ish in his mind. 81 minutes, we get beat 4-0. It could have been eight. We got, in every facet of the game, we got dominated. It was mad.
4-0 down after 80 down. Minutes.
81 minutes, we score a goal. 88 minutes, we score another goal. 92 minutes, we make it 4-3. 95 minutes, Tom Walker gets a pen. Takes the pen, keeper saves it. Comes back to him, fucking scores 4-4. It wasn't really 10 minutes, it was like 14 minutes added on and stuff. It was fucking incredible. Even now, it was the most exhilarated I've ever felt in my entire life. Forget everything else we've done. Forget my kids being born and winning leagues. For 30 seconds, I ran off. I went, we're drawing here. I ran off straight across the fucking halfway line. Didn't know where I was going. No, players were on the other side of the pitch. Turned around. I was in a fucking daze. It was mad. No noise or anything. Gets back. I was like, wow, what the fuck? But the reality had also kicked in about how poor we'd been.
Yeah.
I got lucky. That happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But you make your own luck because of what we've done. Phone goes. That's a Saturday and a Sunday. Phone goes. Karen. You both know Karen. You know what she's like. She's so positive and excitable and everything like that. And it was just dead, low key. It was almost like she'd been told, don't give them anything. Don't let them know. Saturday was great. Then we have the end of season, do whatever it was on the Thursday. Then we win the next couple of games. We win the league. So the point I'm trying to make of that, so on the documentary, Gary's in his office. You know what Gary's like? He's fucking mad, isn't he? Passionate.
Yeah.
Punching walls. Everything's shit. And he does that. That's how he is. He says United. He says City are fucking shit. If City are shit, what the fuck chance have we got?
Yeah.
Right? So I get it. But it was the way it was portrayed. There was comments like the style of play. You both played in our teams. We play attacking football. If we can play football, we want to play football. But it's all about your style. It's all about your personnel. So that person, we were land of the fucking Giants. So we won so many games later on off set pieces. Your recruitment, we've got the world's biggest fucking team. We're going to fucking play that way.
Manny was 6'6" or something.
And he was one of the smaller ones. Yeah. Knox, our right back, was 6'5". Pidge, Oaks, Phoenix, Gus Mafuta, Lewis Maynard. We were fucking monsters.
Yeah.
But we're going to play that way. No problem. I have no issue with that. But then you had classy Nick, Anthony Dudley, Tom Walker. Yeah. We had quality football players. Richie Allen was still there then. So we had quality.
Richie Allen, what was he like full time?
Fucking great lad, mate. Yeah, fucking great lad.
Long way to come on his bike.
Just a lunatic. He always had a lift, someone different every time dropping him off. Like, what you're paying him in? Fucking lunatic. But a great lad. Love him to bits. Another you think about people like him who we've had, Gaz Stopforth, Michael Phoenix, George Green, Gary Roberts.
Do you have a favourite?
Apart from
Jordan.
Always had a soft spot for Gaz Stopforth.
Yeah.
And I think Gaz, this is me talking, I'm not talking for both of us. Gaz, and there was another one, there was two of them, there's Gary Stopforth and Danny Warrender, played a huge part in turning what we were when we were at Ramy in that second season, creating standards, having a quality player that we should never have had on 40 quid. Yeah. It was fucking scandalous. But Gaz knew he could go and do what he wanted for fucking 6 days of the week, as long as he stayed on a Friday night. Whether he did or not, I don't know, but he's still performing. I've loved the lad to bits. Known him a long time. Me and Bird played with McClibber, as I said, a long time ago. So I love what he's about. I love his energy.
Yeah,
he makes me fucking. I look at him and I feel tired. So I love them all.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the fucking easy answer. But he was the type of person that drove not standards, because some of his standards were fucking appalling, but his intensity was incredible, weren't it? You watched him and thought, I've got to do that. He wasn't fast. He couldn't pass a ball. He didn't score. Didn't assist. But that fucking 10-yard press he had, Jesus fucking Christ, there was nothing else like it.
He was so good off the pitch as well.
Oh, he's bonkers. It was like,
you couldn't not have a beer after the game, because he was like, that's Inch. Everyone in showers, we're on it now. Like,
brushing his teeth in shower.
Yeah. He was all...
That game's still going on. But he used to, there was a story when we won that league. The one thing about Gary was, and I'll go back to the other stuff, but one thing about Gary was, he wanted you to celebrate. So if you did well at something, he'd fucking put on good do's. There was one night we won the league.
Gary Neville, you're on about.
Yeah, we'd won the playoffs. Yeah. Everyone's gone and get wrecked. I fucked off home early. Everyone's tanked up. Gaz had been in town, gone back to the hotel, football, ends up in a bar all night, putting all the beers on Gary Neville's tab. So barman's rang up and go, listen, I know it's like 6:30 in the morning, like, but there's a lad down here. He keeps putting it on your tab. Gary and his wife walked down.
He's squid.
He walked downstairs, Gaz stood at the bar, sitting up, just fucking round at the door, ran down the street back towards Manchester. He was a fucking card, weren't he? He still is, just a lunatic.
But like, you and Bernie like wanted to create that as well, because that's a big part of, at that level, of everyone winning together in it, team, like supporting each other.
We call it teamship, because without that, them little relationships. It's like this year at Radcliffe. We've, every player is connected in one way.
Yeah.
So someone's played with someone somewhere. You know what it's like. I don't care how old you are. You go somewhere new, full of bravado. You're a confident guy, but there's always that element of, fucking hell, what's this about? We like to create an environment where everyone trusts each other. Everyone loves each other. Everyone backs each other.
So we've got to the end of that season. You've won the league, National North.
Yeah.
First year at being full time, and then you end up being sacked.
Won the league by 6 points, practically with 3 games to go.
No plateau there, is there?
No, but it goes back to what I was explaining about the documentary. Watching it back, so the documentary came out at the end of that year, so 6 months after the sacking. You're watching it back, and I'm looking, going, aye, this felt systematic. This felt like it was a breakdown. You're trying to explain to the viewers why he was eventually going to sack us. I'm a paranoid guy. I've got the fucking book page. I've got the documentary, and everything to me ties in. Bird's like, what the fuck are you going on about? We got sacked because they didn't like us. But I look at that and go, that was a decision took very early for me. We didn't see, it's not that we didn't see. Listen, I don't necessarily think it was the wrong decision, because of relations, right? We weren't screaming and shouting at each other, we weren't falling out with each other, but you could see they wanted to go a different way. We were never going to be at a football club where just to fight the system. We weren't like that. So they'd already made their mind up on us. They'd already decided where they were going to go. The biggest issue I had, and I had a bit of, I'd probably call it bitterness for probably 6 months afterwards, was we were essentially cheated out of the opportunity to manage it in the National League.
Yeah.
We'd gone from the bottom all the way through with Ramy, with Salford. We've got them to the National League, and then bang, it's taken away from you. Now, we had a few phone calls about other jobs, and we could have took them, but it was a decision. We decided to go to Chester, and we'll get onto that. But we could have gone there with other jobs, but we felt like I had the rug pulled from under us when we were just getting to the point where we worked our whole career for. I'm not a delusional guy. I didn't think I was ever going to manage Man United in a championship in League One, but we wanted to be part of something that went to where they wanted them to get to, and we believed we were the right people for that. So it felt like the rug got pulled from under
us. Do you honestly think if you'd have stayed, do you think you'd have gotten to the Football League?
Without even hesitation, 100%. Because what you've got to remember is the season after, they had an awful start.
Yeah.
I think they didn't win for the first four or five. With mainly the same group of players that we had momentum. We know the lads. We knew what made them tick. We built relationships with them. So back in what me and Bern are as managers, what we are as coaches, how we lead, 100%. I was actually still watching all their games at that point. It weren't one of them, oh, fuck them. They've sacked us. I'm not interested. I was watching thinking, you're not playing nowhere near anything like we were playing. And you used to moan at what we're doing. But Graham Alexander was a serial winner. So he knew what was required.
And it was a name.
That's exactly what it was. Him and Chris Lachetti are names. But most importantly, they are serial winners at higher levels that they wanted to get to.
Yeah.
So a bit like when they employed us. You know, there's always a reason behind why they do things. But I watched the style of football, and you use that as a reason in the documentary against us. It was fucking awful. It was awful. But it was winning football, so no one cares because it's winning football until you decide you want another change, and then the same narrative starts to come around again. So it's for me, it always felt like a systematic decision-making process to make them decisions.
There can't be many managers that are sacked after winning promotion.
Real Madrid used to do it, I think. That was it.
Did they?
Yeah, I think they used to sack a few managers, didn't they, for not winning Champions League back in the day, 20 odd years ago. They win the league and not win a Champions League, they sack them. But
that's a bit different because then you've won the league and you're going on to win something else. You'd won the league, finished
yeah.
the season,
yeah.
planning for next year.
It affected me for a while from a mental point of view, because what you do is, as I say, I've always been a reflective person. You look and go, why does five of the greatest footballers that this country's ever produced think that of us? What aren't we good enough at? Have we done? And you become a bit of a fucking mad ass rather than putting your balls on the table and going, no, we just fell out. That's what it was.
Yeah, you were trying to process that.
Yeah, like, what, have we done something wrong? Is it true all these trolls on Twitter that are saying I'm a dinosaur and I'm fucking useless and this and that? You start to believe, are they right? No.
Did you start to read a lot more then into the social media stuff?
100%.
Because you was quite active on it at the time.
Peppering Twitter at one point. I was like, this needs to stop.
I can feel like you was getting angry with some of the stuff you were reading.
Yeah, but there's also a line, and again, when we went to Chester. So after we left Salford, we went into Chester late, which was a big fucking problem for pre-season stuff. But I knew it was fan-owned. And I knew there'd been relationship breakdowns with the board, even though they were fans, and the rest of the supporters a couple of months before. Because I do my own work. You can't go into somewhere without doing your diligence. And they've been massive. So I went on there knowing I had a good following on Twitter. And I said, look, I'm going to open my DMs. Anybody's got any questions that you need to ask, fire away. Fucking hell, what? Not necessarily a mistake, but Jesus fucking Christ. That was so. My thoughts, and I'm glad you brought social media up. So my thoughts on Twitter was, I like being on Twitter. So when people go, so at Chester, after a game, we got beat on a Tuesday night, last minute counter-attack, goes in a bath for a beer after and goes, maybe if you spend less time on Twitter, you might have not fucking conceded that goal. I'm like, where's the correlation between me calling Boris Johnson on Twitter and fucking conceding a goal on a counter-attack
in the last minute on Tuesday night?
Why didn't you say to me in the bar, if you just stopped taking your dog out for a walk, you might not fucking conceded that goal in the last minute? Where does it stop?
Yeah.
Can I go to the cinema with my kids? What might I do in my personal life isn't a reason why we've not done well in football. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's bit. I've had me more than Burn because Burn's hardly on it. But some of the fucking stuff you get thrown at you, it's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. But I'm on Twitter because I like being on Twitter. The reason I went on Twitter in 2011-12 was because back when we started managing at Rami, I wanted to be close to the players. I wanted to get what was going on in the world. I'd never been on Facebook. So I didn't go on Twitter till I was 26, 27, right?
Yeah. It's the only way you could get the scores as well. You'd go on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there isn't. I didn't go on it for that, but you bang on. So a lot of my, probably get ridiculed for this, a lot of the news I get is on Twitter, is on social media because of the things I follow, right? So, but it was so, I could see what was going on. So when I come in the change room, because I like the banter, don't I? I enjoy all that stuff. I want to be on the same page as you lot. But then things expand, things grow. You know better than anyone. Then your social media presence and followers grow. And mine just fucking boomed. So, all right, I'll play the game with it then. I'm on there. I might as well use it for good. I've been offered all sorts to advertise on there, to make money off it. But then I lose my credibility. So I've just tried to be me. Now, I've had breaks off it intermittently, either through choice or because I've been ill or whatever it is. I've made choices to come off Twitter. But don't ever use it as a medium to one, create something fake to slag me off because you're a fucking dirty shithouse coward that doesn't say anything. And I pulled people a couple of weeks ago in a friendly. I seen someone who put something, and I went over and I went, oh, you're the guy off Twitter, aren't you? And I could the fear. I loved it. And I didn't have to push it. I'm not a bully. But I knew, see it now. It's just me and you here. See it now. And it goes back to that thing where I said where the players will go. You wouldn't say that to me in a team. You're a fucking would. Of course I would. Because what would you do? You wouldn't do anything. So what I put on social media is my opinion, right? It's mine. Don't get pissed off with my opinion. You can talk about it if you want. You can try and convince me it's wrong, but don't tell me what's right and wrong.
But also in the changing room, if you're saying it to a player, it's not just coming from nowhere. It's coming from a place where you want that person to do better, and that player has worked with you, knows where you're coming from.
It's just me and you.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't like what I'm saying, we've had rows. We've had rows in changing rooms. It's not a one-way traffic. You come back and go, fuck off, gaffer, that's wrong. Right, why is it wrong? Well, because this, and I go, fuck, do you know what?
You're right.
You're spot on. I've done that more than I've shouted at people, believe it or not. A lot of people won't believe that. But it's a one-on-one. Social media opens up to everybody. I try my best to reply to everyone. People think that's a mistake. My biggest mistake is I get into arguments. It's my biggest one. Because I'm arguing with someone with two followers. What the fuck are you doing? No one's even reading it anyway. No one's seeing what we're going on about. And all you're doing is slagging me off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I had one the other day on Sunday going on about when I got ill and did the government pay me to go in hospital for a week? And normally...
Yeah, talk about that, because I'm like... So what happened
what
then?
Do you mean the government paid you to go?
Well, so it's like a conspiracy thing that, like, there's a lot of people said, oh, like the government were paying people to send pictures of them in hospital that they've got COVID and stuff like that. And it was like to try and...
So I was getting tweets off people, yeah. I've got three children. If I'm not at football, I'm never away from my kids, right? I spend every minute I can with them. And my wife, an amazing woman. I got ill. I was ill for a week. It was in a bad way. And then blood sugar levels dropped to fucking ridiculous levels. Now, you've got to remember, this is 18 months after the lockdown started. I didn't have a fucking jab or nothing. I was on the side of, I don't give a fuck. If it gets me, it gets me. It'll build my antibodies. Right. So I weren't pushing any agenda.
No.
There was nothing there. Me and Byrne had the jabs. A couple of fucking idiots. Yeah, you deserve to get it. Yeah, I know, I get it. I should have had the fucking jab. But then people start going, oh, it's a load of fake. How much are they giving you? Government paying you to go in hospital. And then I had someone actually thinking it was like a studio, yeah, where I'm taking pictures in a bed with a ventilator on, saying I'm ill. Are you fucking cabbaged?
But
are you fucking stupid?
But why reply?
Yeah, they won't have a clue. Well, you are
because well, I didn't. The point was, so this one that came through on Sunday, I can't remember his name. I just looked and blew him.
Yeah,
dick. I didn't even block him because that's a medal of honor for him. You see?
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, oh, you dick. Now I've never pushed any agenda. I've answered questions when people have asked me what I think about stuff. I was in a bad. I got told I was a few hours away from dying, right? And I've used it as mad as this sounds, as banter to the lads. I've ever told you about when I nearly died, and everyone laughs at it now. But I've never pushed, I had the vaccine afterwards. Did I need it? Probably not. But I had it. I don't care what you do or what you don't fucking do. But don't question my integrity as a man and as a father being away from his children that I pretended to be fucking poorly. You stupid fucking idiots.
I can imagine like the government coming to you and saying,
I know you've not had the jab, but how do you fancy having a couple of days in hospital?
Do do you think you doing that fake hospital thing was why you let in a last minute goal the other week?
Yeah. If you'd have spent less time in that studio and more time on a training ground, you'd have been all right.
Yeah. So Chester, you've got the sacking from Salford, which has come. It did come as a shock because no one expects to get sacked when you win the league. You'd just done a year full time, aren't you? So then you're thinking, shit, do I need to get a job again? Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
And obviously how you two were portrayed on that documentary was, like I've explained hundreds of times, not actually how you were. How did that affect you getting a new job?
Well,
did it help?
Believe it or not, that stock was at its highest.
Yeah.
At that point, and the documentary hadn't come out, or that series, our stock is, you've just fucking beat Harrogate by 6 points, whatever it was, 7 points to the title. You've managed 3 promotions in 4 years, plus you're 2 at fucking Rami. Wow. And people fucking hate this, is why I always do it. Win percentage of nearly 60%.
I've seen some of them.
I've got another one to go on. We won our 350th game the other night. I'm not tweeting it yet.
350 wins.
They fucking hate it, though. They hate facts. You put a fact out there, fuck me, they bite. They hate it. So that was
who's there? Who's there?
The Twitter. The fucking idiots. That's brilliant. It's Twitter just like, best. It's fucking fishing with no bait. It's easy. But that stock was at its highest. Now, to me, as a Bury fan, Chester, we're always in a football league. Yeah. League One, League Two, flip-flop.
Big club.
The biggest club we've ever managed by a fucking massive stretch. I couldn't believe it. I thought, fucking hell. We had other options to go and speak to a couple of clubs in the league, in the National League. Fucking down south, whatever. And Burns going to, like we talked about, that money that we lost out. Do with bollocks. We want to go back to part-time and do what we're good at and take Chester back to where they belong.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. So we took the job, mid-late May, off the back of a relegation. We took the job off the back of a relegation that they nearly got liquidated for the second time. So they'd run out of money. I don't know if you remember, they'd in 2018, sort of March, April time, Michael Owen and all the celebrities. You're not playing it?
Yeah.
You played in it. So a load of celebrities played in not good footballers. Which one are you?
Both.
Yeah. Celebrity footballer.
Not a celebrity and not a good footballer.
So they did that meant a massive fundraising event, could keep going, then they got relegated. They knew that was coming for a long time, to be fair to them. But the knock-on effect is there's no money at a football club. But that support base is absolutely phenomenal at making sure the club doesn't go without. Do you understand what I mean by that? But what we didn't realise was the damage that had been done previously. So we took the job.
Were they still full-time at that stage?
But they had been full-time.
Yeah.
So it's a choice on us. And they asked us that. So what do you want to do? We won't go back to part-time. The fucking budget. It's impossible unless you want to pay a load of 17, 18-year-old kids. And they had a top thriving academy, by the way, that Callum, who's now the manager, was running. And there'll be a lot of people that thought they should have done that then. But we took the job with 4 weeks till pre-season starts. No money. Two players on 2-year deals. Kingsley James and Ross Hannah, two top players. We're on top money because they've been top players, but then got relegated. We're on the budget. And they took up about a third of the budget. Just think about that.
Just them two players.
Yeah. Not necessarily because they were on massive mega money, but because they were on good money and the budget was fucking average, right? And then they had 2 or 3 others on contracts that had come over from that season. So all of a sudden, you're up to half your fucking budget gone on half a dozen players. So the first thing, we had to pay them two players up to get them off the budget. So you know how it works. We didn't pay them the full wages. They get a little bit of payout. They find another club. It's what you have to do. Our budget then decreases based on what we paid out.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
I goes on holiday for a couple of weeks. And Burns went for me. He said, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare getting lads in. We can't do it. The money we're offering, 150, 200 quid a week to players at that level, I thought it was impossible. How it worked out, we end up, Steve Howson, Dom Smalley, Gaz Stopforth, Scott Burton, 4 stalwarts that if you asked them to take a fucking bullet for you, they would. We've got lads, come and help us out, come and play. I think we paid them, say, 200 quid a week each, maybe a little bit more. Shenton was another one. Grant Shenton had just got in the, our goalkeeper from Ramy, just got in the team of the year. We paid them all a blanket wage. And you're thinking, they're not going to come in the game. So friends, ex-players doing us a massive favour. If they wouldn't have come in, we would have been absolutely fucked. Fucked. So we start the season. Spennymoor, ironically, at home, 0-0. Really solid performance. Plays Curzon away on Monday night, wins 3-0. I'm thinking, fuck me. 4 months ago, won the manager of the year. It's fucking so easy, this management, like. He's top of the league. Game three, plays Blyth Spartans away, gets beat 8-1.
Oh, I remember that.
8-1. And you stand in front of the camera after the game and you go in, at me, my interview, and I'm going, heads will roll. We've only been in a week. Heads will roll. Those lads, they'll never play for this football club again, like it's April or something. What the fuck am I saying here? You're just on autopilot. Yeah. Embarrassed. You know, the social media universe is coming for you. Oh, it's only because of the fucking budget at Salford. I know. Why didn't you tweet me that Monday night when we won you 3-0? So that's how it went.
Yeah.
Get beat 8-1. And before the game, I'm like sat on the away following was incredible. There were about 400 up there in the northeast at Blyth. And I'm like leaning on the side of Tomtuck fans, going, yeah, we have a way of doing things away from home. And I look at the game and I'm thinking, what has happened? And I can laugh and smile about it now. They probably still don't. It was one of the most embarrassing moments. And we had a few of them at Chester, right? At Chester. It was crazy. And then that week, the fucking gets a phone call. We can't play at home for a month. What do you mean? We've got a double head. No, you can't play at home. The fucking roof's come off the stand. There's a leak coming. It's gone all through the electrics and all sorts. He's fucking up. So we're not players then for 2 weeks and we play Telford away. Start well, boys. Nice and tight. Stay in the game. 8 minutes, 2-0 down. Bear in mind, the last game, and there was 1,000 Chester fans there because it's one of the local ones.
Yeah.
1,000. The noise before the game was, it was amazing. Some of my best days in football have been going to Telford away with Chester. It was fucking amazing. We're 2-0 down after 8 minutes after just losing 8-1. And I'm
panicking.
The noise coming from them at us was mad.
Is that the first time you really ever experienced that?
Of course. Yeah, of course. What's so
because you've always, always been successful. Built
clubs. Yeah. We took every club we've ever been at to the highest point. Yeah. At Chester, they've got a massive history. Ignore the fucking idiots that'll come out and say they've got no history. They started back in 2010. They've got a massive history.
Yeah.
They've played big clubs in big cups. They're a big club. So we've never had that before. The abuse. I remember Burns' mum and stepdad were at the bottom of the stand. They had to get ushered by the stewards because the fans had turned on them. This is game four. Right? It was game four. And I've got fucking palpitations, anxiety, anger, everything's kicking on. I remember walking off the pitch thinking, Burn will kill somebody. Right? You're making that noise outside the ground, it's game over. And I'm going to have to fucking join in with him, and I don't really want to, because that's how we work.
Yeah.
But I could see him, he said, when he goes, I've never met anybody in my life, but it takes a lot. And I can see he's gone. He's fucking gone. And I'm having to like steer him back towards the chin room in the corner. And then it all turns on us, and it's when you look at the cool light of Dave, forget who we are, we just lost 8-1 and 3-1 after relegation and nearly being liquidated. It's not personal towards me and Burn. It's just the football.
It's a build-up of... Yeah.
And but you're getting...
You're the
eye of the storm.
Yeah, because you're the guys...
Of course. We brought you in to stop that. Yeah, so I don't care what you've done in the past of all your promotions, which are all false. It's easy at Ramy because there were no pressure. It's easy at Salford because you've got all this money. Now you're at a real club. You're fucking useless. It wasn't personal.
Yeah.
Right? Now sort of back to me said, yeah, it was. We didn't like it. but it was a crescendo of things. So we then come off the back of that. We then went 12 unbeaten.
How?
Just because of
what did you change anything?
It was just a case of talking about standards and doing what we've always done. We changed we was playing 3-5-2 with for the first time. We tried 3-5-2, 0-0, 3-0, went with it again 8-1,
yeah.
Got fucking beat 8-1. And we went with it again in the fourth game because we thought it might be a blip. And then 2-0 down. Half time, we changed it back to normal.
Like, this is what I want people to hear. Like, it's not just keep going. Lads, you have to do better.
Works.
Yeah.
No.
There's actual sense behind it, right? Okay, we tried 3-5-2 and we did well, but then it didn't work. And it didn't work. Why didn't it work? Right, we'll have to change it. So it's like, it's that so tactical.
We went 3-5-2, 8 minutes in, 10 minutes, we've gone, fuck it, 4-3-3, back to what we've played in the past, back to what everyone knows on the pitch.
Yeah.
You all know your roles and responsibilities, right? And then because of the ground and the stadium, we didn't then play for either a week or two. So we got to go on the training ground. It's better, so much better, isn't it, when you can get to, everything you talk about, you can get to put into yeah. practice. Then we goes to Geisley away, game five, 1-0 down, 89th minute, we equalise, header. That was it then. It just went, confidence grew, everyone understood the shape, the requirements. And we got, I think our next defeat was Alti. I think you beat us
2-0.
We had Gaz Stotford were injured. We had Dan Mooney and Anthony Dudley centre mid that day. And all two were top side.
Yeah. By the way,
fucking make no bones about it. They were brilliant. And we were third, I think, or fourth, maybe something like that. And if we'd have won, we'd have climbed right up. It was a year Chorley had a really good start. Been to Chorley drawn. We were flying. But going back, I don't make excuses. Never made an excuse in my life. These are reasons.
Yeah.
We're picking up injuries after injury. To go, Gaz Stopford doesn't get injured. He had a fucking welt on his shin and he was out for a month because he was tackled just like as if he'd been doing some sort of weird martial arts.
Yeah.
And, and his shin was knackered, couldn't play. So we just had good players and big players missing. Then we get on a bit of a mini run. The end of that season, we finished ninth, 2 points outside of playoffs, 3 points outside of playoffs. Fucking... Do you remember when Mourinho said that season when United finished second?
Was that one of your biggest accomplishments?
It wasn't an accomplishment because we didn't do anything. But we got took by the board. The board never once in our tenure at Chester said you have to get in the playoffs. The first year was about staying up. Please don't have a double relegation.
Yeah.
We went to a fans forum meeting and there was about 250 people in there. And I said to them, there's more people here than what used to be watching Rami. That's how big the club is, yeah. Right? And I said, and someone goes, yeah, please just don't get sick of emotion. And I'm on the mic, a bit like what I said about X. And I went, what? I said, we're waiting to win a league. So you create your own expectations. You become a victim of your own expectations. Yeah, yeah. They don't know who Dom Small is or Steve Elson is or Anthony Dudley, who we got on loan. They don't know them players. So we finished 2-3 points outside the playoffs. An accomplishment is the wrong word because we didn't do anything, but it was our biggest overachievement, knowing what we work with.
Yeah.
And then another thing that I've always wanted to get out there about being at Chester and about money was the understanding that me and Bernard that of how big a fan on club is, that every penny that you put, it comes out, every penny at that football club comes out of a fan's pocket. We never ever moan about the budget ever because it doesn't matter how big or small it is. It's you that's put it in.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean by that? Yeah. So you go to fucking work, you work 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, you go home, you feed your fucking wife and kids, and then you put in a £20 in a direct debit. It's incredible. It's them people that keep it going. Yeah. So the biggest asset of that football club, their only asset, is their support base. The supporters are their biggest asset. They have a couple of liabilities, but so does every club. But the support base is what makes them what they are. However, what that means is, for me, in my opinion, and again, I never said it when I was there, it's got a ceiling on it. What that ceiling is depends on the size of your support base, your crowd, and how you grow it. But it's got a ceiling on it. I think of a fan-owned club that has done really well is Exeter. But you look at where Exeter is. It's a city with a population of probably 150,000 to 200,000 in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
right? Which can call upon miles and miles around it support. A bit like Wrexham are finding. Even though Wrexham's only sub, not that it means the support, by the way, because of the owners, but even though Wrexham's a population a similar size as Bury, it reaches out to North Wales and beyond. So people feel like they're part of something because it's in North Wales. Do you get what I mean? Now, Chester don't have that. FC United have found the level. FC United's one of the best football clubs you will ever go to in terms of understanding what they are, what their values are, what they stand for. But it's got a level because of what they can charge. They don't have shirt sponsorship. So there's only a certain amount of money. You're as good as your players. I said at the beginning of the podcast. Yeah. As managers, as football clubs, you're as good as your players on the pitch. So you have to find a way of doing things. Our way at Chester was, and again, what was an accomplishment was we sold over £100,000 worth of players in our time there. We've never done that. We never had to sell a player. We bought him from Rami that we put on a contract.
Yeah.
Never had to do it at Salford because it was the opposite way around. And at Chester, we were bringing players in that no one wanted. Joel Taylor was released by Kidderminster, went out on loan to Hillsborough. When we took him, sold him. Now, the biggest thing for Chester is always the sell on afterwards in the hope that he goes to somewhere then does well.
Yeah.
That's none of our business. We can't coach them anymore. Once they leave, that's on that player performing. So that was another biggest accomplishment. The revenue we create for the football club and the add-ons of percentage of profit, now they've still got on players that we got rid of, he's still there. Second season, we had a guy come in, a fella came in, that put some money into the football club. He wanted to take over the club. It fell to pieces. He's fucking me and Burn. I'm convinced we're cursed. It's all about fucking timing. We used to have to train on five-a-side pitches all over the Northwest because we had nowhere to train. We had to train on the pitch, which wrecked the pitch. Now they've got a fucking training ground. They've got a commercial manager that's bringing all sorts in. It must be us. We must be cursed.
You wish that was there when you was there.
Of course.
Yeah.
So Callum, who's been at the football club for 10 years, who's doing an incredible job now, who started with the academy and the youth team, the junior team up to the academy, he's seen the fruits of all the labour of the club being done. And he's now getting the reward for that, as well as being a good young fucking manager.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
the way, let's not miss that out. But we picked up a football club that was fucking dead. That was on its ass.
Yeah.
And if I'm being honest, through brute fucking force of expectation on players of telling them what's required at this football club and favours off friends. Sounds mad, that.
Turned it around.
Year two, we had someone put money in, which was never sustainable. That then went fucking missing halfway or towards the end of the season. We had a Kwasi Asante, who's one of the best number nines I've seen in the last 10 years, went for free. What football club was your top scorer on 25 goals for free? Doesn't. He does at Chester because they can't put you on two-year contracts. Right. The player goes, I'm not signing a new deal.
Contract, leave on a free.
It's his prerogative.
Yeah.
But you're not in that position to be able to do that with players. If you'd offered him that at the start, he'd have signed it.
Yeah.
But the Chester weren't in that position. And they're now on fucking two-year contracts. Again, another thing that's happened. COVID strikes. We was at Chester for nearly 4 years. We completed one full season. That was the first year where they'd just been relegated, nearly been liquidated, and all the favours doing us, friends doing us favours.
Yeah.
Year two, lockdown, you beat us in the playoffs. Yeah. We're fucking cheated. Year three, we're fucking second in the league when it stops. We end up finishing third because there was an extra game when it got knocked on the head. Flying. Year four, I get ill. All the players get fucking ill, all get COVID. We have our season put back a week. We play as Farsley away. We 2-0 down it first fucking 30 minutes. We draw 2-2. You think, fuck me, right, we'll get going again. We were fucked. The squad was fucked. There was no budget. We had players playing for free. It was, and I remember at the beginning of that season, our biggest job at Chester was to be salespeople, was to sell season tickets.
I didn't realise you were there 4 years.
Four seasons. So 3.5 years it worked out. My God. I know.
Wow.
Because we never were there. Fucking COVID. We never played.
Yes.
So before we played then, there was a vote went out. Should we carry on playing? Do you remember? And now all the top sides voted to carry on. We voted. We were going to vote no. But everyone at the football club, me, Burn, the staff, all the players said, we won't get paid. We're going to do it for free. In fact, we'll put money back into the club. We'll buy into your booster, but do a booster budget. We'll put money in, forego any bonuses and all that type of stuff. We played the playoffs. We didn't train. They trained for fucking 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, we've been in. We knew they weren't training.
We had fucking two sessions after not playing for 6 months.
Oh, God.
We're 3-0 down. We have a man sent off. They have a penalty. You're thinking, it's always us. Yeah. We get it back to 3-2 with 10 men. We should have fucking got some. If we'd have scored, the momentum was with us. But we got beat by the better side over the season. Let's not. That's how it was.
Yeah.
As I said, you go into year three. Starts in fucking October because of lockdown and all that type of stuff. We had six players. So here's one. They did a booster budget. They raised over 100 grand. It's fucking phenomenal. On top of everything else they do, booster budget at Chester in that third season raised more money than the football club did. Just think about what I just said.
Yeah, wow.
The football club was raising 75, 80 fucking grand to put towards your budget. And we're going, what do you want us to set up? When we had to come out and go, best squad we've ever had. Best squad we've fucking ever had. And the fans are going, fucking brilliant, this might I put my money in and just continue to do it.
Because if you don't,
you don't sell season tickets.
Yeah, you can't.
But they use it against you, said.
Yeah.
So what they do at the end is they go, you told us it was the best fucking squad you ever had. What did you want us to say?
Yeah, I had to.
Lads, don't buy season tickets, we're going to be fucking rubbish. Do you know what I mean? So we was in this perpetual cycle of mistakes being made. I can't praise that football club enough and the people, but there wasn't enough business acumen on the board. They were good fucking hardworking people. Like I just said to you about 9-to-5 jobs going on to feed the kid, then volunteering to be a board member, not getting paid, but they didn't have the requisite business acumen to be able to back up funding. It always kept going to the same people all the fucking time. Now, what happens when you do that is their demands go up.
Yeah.
You're taking fucking £100 a month off me, shirt sales, beers in the club, season ticket, boost the fucking budget, and you get beat fucking 3-0 off that shit. I get it, pal. But that's not how football works. But I get it.
What do you want me to say?
I understand with you, but your money isn't enough. And we overachieved at Chester at times. We underachieved massively in that last year. Like, don't make no bones about it. But there's mitigating reasons as to why.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? With the slow start we had with people being ill, with budget constraints, if you want to call them that, restraints, there was varying reasons to it. Now they've gone back to a hybrid model. They train 3 days a week.
Yeah.
Last year, they've got a training ground.
Commercial department. They've
got a commercial manager that's doing a fucking worldy job. And you've got lads on 2-year deals.
Yeah.
George Glendon, Det Weeks, Joe, incredible players that we took to the football club that Callum's getting the best out of. So they've got he's now got the perfect storm, as well as being a good manager. I have to impress on that so much. It's not luck, it's not fluke, because they've come off a bad year as well. So that is an incredible football club that, if they want to reach the glory days of League Two, there needs to be some big changes made at the top. I don't know what they are. I've not got the answer. That's not my job. But there needs to be change. And I hope it works out for them, because they're a fucking incredible bunch.
So where's your stock then when you've gone from there, when you've left there?
Fucking high. It's still high, because apart from the Chester fans, so when we left the football club, we were 6 points off the playoffs after 15 games, not two games or three games. Anyone can say that. But after 15 games, we were 6 points off the playoffs, right? We were winning one, losing one. That's what we were doing then. We'd go and lose it. We lost our last two. I was fucking ill again. I got COVID again. We lost our last two games. 2-1 away at Erifford, 1-0 at Alter Geisley. Burnham resigned. We didn't get sacked at Chester.
Right, I remember this.
We resigned. Burnham went, "I've had enough." So I ain't sitting in a fucking dugout, grafting my bollocks off, sitting in traffic for 2 hours to come over here to be absolutely abused when I'm giving everything I can, when the players are giving you care. We're just not good enough at this moment in time. Over time, we'll get better through recruitment, through culture, through training. We'll make changes. We're not taking the abuse. Two games before, I used to have to sit down on a chair next to the fucking door. I was like an old man, mate. It was a mess, wheezing. Bloke's talking in the stand to his mates and saying that Johnson should have died with that COVID. It's his own fucking fault not getting a jab, not having the jab. Bernard's brother James is sat there. You know, what did you fucking say? And he said it again, and then it's kicked off in the stand. So
he's the worst one to be.
Bernard's brother, but one of my best mates. Yeah. He loves us. It's not having someone talk like that about us. So then all it creates, it's like an infection. They're friends with him, and he's friends with them, and then they all fucking start to hate you. And what they loved about you at the start, when they all wanted to DM you, they use against you in the end. You're spending too much time on Twitter. Fucking hell, stop walking your dog. Get on the training ground, practice headers. It's just because it's a reaction provoked out of being pissed off that you've not won a game.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Yeah. Now, also, you've not asked this question, but some of the fucking individual results we had at that club were mind-blowing. 8-1. Every time we went out of the cup, it was against a fucking team from a league below. It just, every season. We thought, you remember the year when Marine played Tottenham? We played Marine in the last round of the qualifying round. You're thinking, come on. Gets beat 1-0 at the last fucking minute. Marine are a club on the up. You're going to have to look what they're doing now, but they beat us 1-0. Scabby penalty. Shouldn't have fucking been a penalty. You can't say that, because you've lost against a team of two leagues below. It goes to Royston in the FA Trophy. Get beat 3-0. League below. We goes to Mask. Draws 0-0. Gets them back at home on a Tuesday night. They've got half the fucking squad missing because of work. They beat us 4-0 with 10 men. And you're thinking, what the fuck is going on here? It's us. You've got to take responsibility. If we're doing something wrong in these cup games, these one-off games, we're not, that stuff we talked about motivating, our organisational setup isn't right. So I will take...
Is it a mentality thing for the lads as well?
But it has to be a mentality thing for me and Burn as well. Yeah. Because it comes from...
I don't see how you'd have dropped your standards though or anything like that.
No, but it doesn't matter whether you see it or you don't. Something systematically has gone wrong 3 or 4 times. Once is a fluke. Twice, you're unlucky. 4 times, you're incompetent. So... With all the, I love my time at Chester. Love my time. I think our win percentage was well. I think win and draw was about 70%. Let's say so. It was decent. It was all right.
Yeah,
not good enough. Not for people with standards. So in terms of the board, what they set, we overachieved. That last year we didn't. In terms of personal standards, not fucking good enough. Not good enough. When the season stopped in 2 years, we were in the playoffs twice. What could we have done more? Probably. Probably.
So you've resigned, come out of Chester. Did you have a bit of time off then?
About 2 weeks.
Is that all it was?
Fucking 2-3 weeks.
And then jumped straight into to Spennymoor?
Yeah. I think what had happened was they'd seen us come out. They then sat their manager. They were on a bad run, similar to similar position to Chester.
Yeah.
With high expectations at Spenny. Get a phone call, drives up there. I'm the eternal optimist. I'm driving up there pretending to burn this 3-hour drive is fucking easy.
You rang me once and said, fancy it, Spennymoor. It's only an hour and a half away.
In a jet.
Fucking mad. When you look on a map, it's closer to fucking Norway than it is to Manchester. And you're going, And I'm going, it's traffic. There's no traffic. It's traffic that will be all right. It's one clean run. It's not about the fucking three motorways. Yeah. You know what? You're playing the game because you're desperate to get back in. And I've always wanted us to step out of our comfort zone because everyone's going, oh, you keep signing the same players all the time. Well, that's because we live in a small pool of players in Manchester. And they're all good players, so of course you do.
Yeah.
Let's go to the North East and try something different. Fucking loved it. Absolutely loved it. We were at one point, I think we were 14 points off the playoffs. In the 78th minute last game of the season, we could have got in the playoffs. We won against Chorley 2-0 and something happened somewhere else. So over the time we went there, from mid-December to the end of the season, we'd have finished seventh. If we, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of the form table.
Yeah, yeah.
So
how long were we there for?
December to September. So we had second half of the season, then the beginning of the season.
And what happened start of that season then?
You didn't start too bad.
Well, we lost 1 out of 8 in the league. But what had gone on was, during the summer, and what a fucking group of lads. They're the best. Fucking amazing lads. Because they're all like early, mid-30s. Fucking James Curtis is 40, our age. But they're all of an age where they're the last of my generation, of our generation. Do you get what I mean? Yeah, like Jordan is at the back end of our generation. Yeah. The last of ours. They had a fucking load of them. Absolute diamonds. Brilliant players. They didn't give a fuck about what we were trying to coach. They just wanted to play their way. Genuinely, like they try, they listen, but they just get on the pitch and they do their own fucking thing. And there's a lot of that I love about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But a bit like what we had at Ramy, they've got a group of 6-7 players that have been together for years.
Yeah.
Jason Ainsley's in the background. What a fucking diamond of a man he is.
He sounds.
Who's now the head of football? Sound, who's operating in the background? Doesn't do anything. He's not stabbing your back. Don't want the fucking job. But they just have their way. They've all been together for so long. Glenn Taylor, centre forward. What a fucking player. What a player. 25 goals every year in the National League North. Didn't give a fuck about the team. And that's not a dig. The reason he scores, you were the same. The reason you lot scored so many goals was because you didn't give a fuck about laying it off there if I can get a shot off. I'm fucking shooting. And when it goes in the top fucking bins, everyone's going mad. When the keeper says it, tips around the corner, why don't you roll him in? You can't win.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's a ruthless. He should have played League One, minimum. 6'2", fucking ripped to shreds, quick. Never seen a player play off both feet. That's good. He's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Another fallacy about the money that he was earning at Spennymoor was a disgrace, the pressure he had in him because of the made-up narratives by Darlington fans and other clubs that he was on. It was nonsense. A load of shit. I know I used to look at the budget sheet and think he was underpaid.
Is that a teacher, isn't
he? Got a great job. Does well at football. I think there was a conversation with maybe Lee Johnson at Hibs wanted to take him and he's like, nah, I'll just stay at Spenny. Two kids, family man, yeah. What a fucking player. But didn't give a fuck. He didn't, I'm doing patterns where like I do with you, playing to you, set back. He wants a fucking turn and shoot. Because most of the time when he does it, he scores. Mark Anderson wants to shoot. That's go and play, lads. That's what we should have done with Emmott is go and play.
Yeah.
But we wanted some structure behind it. Fucking loved it. But what happened was, goes to Marbella at the end of the season. So the chairman there, the owner, Brad, fucking another dad.
Who does end of season trip?
They've gone every year to Marbella.
Right, yeah? Okay.
So we get told, it's why we took the fucking job. End of season. We go to Marbella. Fuck me, we're coming. Yeah. Right? So as the season was going on, he'd keep changing the parameters of what were going on. Well, you need to get in the playoffs to go to Marbella. Obviously, we missed out on the playoffs. So what he'd done is we paid 50% and he paid 50%. Me and Burke couldn't believe it. He's paid 50% to go to Marbella. Fucking brilliant. What a guy. For the players, they were going mad. Because in their head, he's always paid
should
for it.
Be free, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not a dig at the players going, you shouldn't expect it. It's just what they've always done. So he's paid 50%, lads have paid 50%. Best trip in my life. Fucking unbelievable. What a place. What a group of lads.
Oh, I know, I've been 15 times.
Oh, mate. Honestly, just fucking up. It's better than Prestatyn. Trust me. So we came back, pre-season starts, and things were going on in the background. Expenses for the lads that weren't in the Northeast weren't getting paid on time through various reasons. The Northeast lads were getting fucking mad because they weren't getting expenses, even though they were going from Middlesbrough to Spennymoor, which is 30 mile. And it just caused a bit of a riff. We didn't see it, but it was affecting performances. Bernard Jono doing it Bernard Jono's way. Don't worry about that type of stuff. Just fucking get your head down, concentrate on wins. We was fucking horrible. Hard to beat. Lost 1 out of 8. Even the one we lost, we were 1-0 up against Kiddy and we got beat 4-1. Young keeper struggled that day, but he'd done really well for us. And then our FA Cup turns up, another fucking Chesterman, plays Clitheroe away, two leagues below. Gets beat 2-0. What I didn't know, what I weren't privy to, was the night before, Bernard already took the decision to resign. So, and he wanted to get the game out of the way. And then a few things happened in the build-up to that game where he pulled me after the game and went, I'm done. I'm going, what do you mean? He went, I'm done. I need a break. He said, I'm going to explode. He said, I'm at a point where I'm sick of lies and nonsense and backstabbing and people working in this. You know, all that type of stuff. Football gets to you. And when he says something, burn, you know him. He means it. I can say fucking things and people are like, John's off again. Do you know what I mean? And I change again. But when he says something, he means it. And I was like, what the f-? And he came back to mine. He said, can I come in? He's never done it ever. And he's Kayla. And I went, yeah. So he comes in the house. Kayla's fucking, but be careful how a word this could come out wrong. So we're cleaning the hamster cage. Literally. The hamster cage. They're both dead now.
Right.
Just cleaning her hamster cage. Oh, you've come in. Well, cleaning the hamster cage. So, and he sits down and he explains it. I'm done. He said, but if he resigns with me, I'll fall out with him. That's what he said. Now, the bad thing was, the day after we had a charity game back up in Spennymoor that we had to go back up for. So we had a good conversation, mate. He left and she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm done. I said, you're mad. If he falls out with me, he's my best pal. I said, he's done. I'm fucking done. Just like what happened at Chester. So it was, I loved it. It was an amazing time. Fucking the best people, the owner, the church, the head of football, the fans were incredible. What a fucking bunch of guys. They still DM me now.
Yeah.
Just too fucking far. Just too far. Just,
I was going to say, on top of what Burn said, the 3-hour drive there and back as well.
Yes. Well, and we had an incredible run. We did all right again. But missing out the playoffs by a point or 50 points, we failed because we said we'd get you there. So it was just too far. It was the right decision at the right time. And to be honest with you, Burn, what I've not mentioned is Burn had been in hospital for a couple of weeks at the back end of the previous season. Big problem with his kidneys. So I'd been ill the year before. We needed a break.
Just getting a little bit too much.
Just too much. It's been 14 years relentlessly of our high standards not being met. And we needed to reflect and review on what we'd done. And I think it was a perfect time to sort of come out of the game.
So you touched on it a little bit ago. So you're at Radcliffe now and you've just got your 350th win.
Yeah.
That's a big one, that.
So I keep,
and that just doesn't come.
No,
that's a lot.
I've got a record of every game we've ever managed, and I do have genuinely people go, why'd you do that? Well, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I keep a record of achievement of what I'm proud of?
Yeah,
I don't walk around with my fucking medals on my neck or my trophies on the fucking shelves, but it's a personal achievement of what we've done. I'm not doing it to sell myself to a chairman that might be on Twitter going, oh, that's good. Lincoln's chairman fucking likes what John has won. I couldn't give a fuck about that nonsense. It's for me.
Yeah. So what have you got? 350 wins?
In all games. We're on 295 in the league.
How many leagues have you won? Or promotions, shall I say?
So we've won five. We've won five promotions. He's got six now.
Seven.
So you're on seven. So we've got five promotions. We've had three failures in playoffs. So we've got the lowest we've ever finished is ninth. Ninth is the lowest we've ever finished in 15 years, which is two positions outside the playoffs.
That was Chester.
That was Chester and I think it was eighth with Spenny. But I said that because the point I'm trying to make with that is there's a lot of managers that have a full career of that'll be as good as they do, eighth and ninth at that level of football. We've managed 220 games in National League North and won over 50% of them. Do you know what I mean? And what people try to do. And this, listen, by the way, this podcast might come across that like I'm trying to post on what people think about us and I'll pretend I don't give a fuck. I do give a fuck because the lack of respect you show.
Of course you do. Everybody, like everybody.
The lack of respect you give a fuck.
Yeah, everybody can say, I don't care what people say, but you do.
Yeah,
you do because you have standards.
You do and you don't.
Well, I don't give a fuck about what you think about my style of play. That's your opinion. I don't care if you think, my haircut's fucking shit. It's your opinion. I know it is, before you start. What I give a fuck about is when you try and diminish what we've achieved because we managed Salford.
Yeah.
We took Salford to the highest point. Some people will argue anyone could have done it, right? Well, the previous manager didn't. We did the best job we could at Chester with limited backing due to unforeseen circumstances like COVID, like stadium closures, like relegation. We've always been up against it. We've always tried to be the best we can be and set standards that no one else expected us to set. But you become a victim of that, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And the one thing I did put out there recently, about a year ago, was our worst year was still probably better than 90% of managers that are managing that they've ever had. We're at a different set of standards, not because of who I am or who Bernard is, but because of what the documentary portrayed. Because that's the only way they know us.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we were so keen to get you on, because of that, the misillusion of what people thought you and Bernard are. And I hope, obviously, with the podcast and listening to you, that the biggest thing that comes out of it is the knowledge you have, the way you manage the players, tactically, like how good you are, and the standards and stuff that you bring when you come to a football club. And I don't think the documentary portrayed, well, it didn't. The documentary didn't portray that, because I always get asked that question, and you probably get people abusing you on social media. But the standard and 350 wins and league titles and promotions doesn't come.
And here's the other thing, and I really appreciate that. I feel a bit embarrassed, but I really appreciate it. The most important thing for me here is that you two both play for me and Bern. It's not like you're interviewing someone that's never played football with you. You played for me and Bernard. You know what we're about as people. That's the most important thing in this, because you can tell the story as long as I can. Yeah. I can make shit up, but you can back it up.
But that's the thing where I said, like, it took me a few weeks to buy into it, because I didn't know you.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that respect. I'm sat here now and I've been, like, hounding you to come on the podcast because I have that respect.
Yeah.
And I respect everything you've done, and I wanted for your kind of story and that to be out there for people to realise that, fucking hell, actually, he's a really, really good manager, and he's not done this by luck or chance. He worked hard at it, and it's took him 15 years of experience to get where he's got.
Yeah.
I hope that's come across.
What I would say is, then, when you was at Chester and Spenny, when I seen you, it was still Jono, but it was a little bit different. You could see you were sort of getting pissed off with it. Do you know what I mean? And
tired.
Yeah.
It's the frustration of constraints.
Now I'm playing for you, we're back again out. Yeah. It's like the change I've seen in you.
So you're at Radcliffe now, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're at Radcliffe. Good bunch of lads. You've got Nicky Adams under you, aren't you? He's there.
Skipper.
Jordan. Any of us that we know? Who will I know?
Lewis Maynard. Anthony Dudley.
Yeah.
Josh Hancock,
who was at Alton with so Jordan.
Good side this season.
Listen, the biggest thing for the Radcliffe, it was twofold. We had a six-hour meeting with... I had to make peace that was an unemployed football manager and not an unemployed National League North manager. Do you understand what I mean by that? Yeah. I was an unemployed manager. Lose the ears and grace is about dropping levels. You're as good as the level you're at, Jono. It's as simple as that. At this moment in time, you're unemployed. Through choice, we turned down talks with other clubs. When we sat down, when he made his decision and the application or the vacancy went out, we went and met him at his house, me, Bern, Marcus, the owner, and Paul, the chairman. We were there for 5-6 hours at his house because there was too many things to talk about, what the expectations are from us. Can you match them? Everything felt right. It felt the first time in my whole career, because Rami, we winged it for the first 2 years. Let's not get around the fact that we had any plan. We just happened to have good players. And then we've grown in terms of doing the right qualifications, about doing your fucking hard yards on the training pitch, losing games, having rows with fans, you all different experiences. It's the first time ever. And I probably said this every time I get a job, but it's the first time ever we've walked into a club, both of us, holding hands and gone, fucking right this for us. 800 yards away from Burns' house, 1.2 mile away from mine. The owner couldn't be more alike in terms of what we're about as people, in terms of doesn't give a fuck what's going on behind us. I care about what's going on in front. We've got a chairman that is so hands-on and wants to improve the football club's infrastructure and image going forward. We've got a set of players that, again, ignoring the fucking bullshit, have come to the football club for the right reasons. He took a pay cut to leave to come to us on his doorstep. Players are looked after. Me and Bernard, I said it at the beginning of the thing, we're fair people that pay people what they deserve, or the owner does, pays them what they deserve. But the nonsense that they throw attached to it to us all the time, it grates on you after a while.
Yeah,
that's where I have to switch off and go, shut the fuck up. They've come for the right reasons. Might take a year, might take 2 years, might take 3 years. This club that we've now took over, based on what we've seen so far, on the pitch and off the pitch, will do nothing but step forward.
Good. Three quick questions before we finish.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite class of 92.
Phil Neville by a fucking long stretch.
Phil Neville. Love him. Any reason why?
Just because he's a normal guy. I texted him. I was in Orlando on holiday when the news came out that he'd left, and I was with a wife, and I WhatsApped him. Didn't know if he was on the same number. Well, I knew he was because he always texts me.
Yeah.
Like, happy birthday. Oh, I was ill. So I texted him anyway. If you fancy having a beer, I'll cheer you up after you've been sacked. I'm in Orlando. So he put back a load of laughing emojis. These owners are... just a normal guy.
He's a normal
just a
reply.
Fucking normal guy. But you can see when... With his management, and obviously he's still a ruthless guy, but he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
Always got on with him.
Funniest time in football. Quick memory. Funniest.
Fucking hell, mate. I've got.
Give us one. Give us one.
Probably when we'd won promotion away at Bamber Bridge, and we all got on that car, about 10 of us in a car, and someone was on roof and he fell off. Fucking Danny Warren had drove it over a bump and fucking Billy went flying off.
What, so you all piled in one car? One person's on the roof.
On the roof and he fucking slammed on and went flying. But that's just, I've got too many X-rated stories.
There's all sorts. There was Nuki. There was, mate, 10 times.
What about Nuki when we're waiting for that bus and the guy? He didn't turn up.
3 hours and him and Gaz with them outfits on.
Yeah, we were dressed as wrestlers.
Pissed up at 7 in the morning. We had one.
By the time you turned up, we'd had about
steaming.
About 10
and
beers.
Gaz stopped for brought a traffic cone on the coach and just went, goo, 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 all the way down. 6 hours.
6 hours to the driver.
Danny Webber. Because Danny jumped onto everything, didn't he? Sat on the front of the coach going, what the fuck am I? This cram little pug, what the fuck am I doing? And Gaz behind him went, goo, goo, goo.
Oh, mate. It's
but bad. Every story... All my mad stories, he's in most of them. I don't want to. When I retire, all that stuff.
It was, honestly, mate, it was anything went for 6 years.
Yeah,
anything
we were probably, that sounds mad what I'm going to say, but we were probably one of the original fucking like crazy gangs of non-league. And then we brought it off to Salford. And then I think they looked at the thought, and they were right.
Yeah, it had to stop. I'm glad someone stopped it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have got to the heights that you got to now.
No, if I didn't see
one. You had to stop. You had to stop. Like Harry used to get a coach. We were that tight. We'd go to the North East and they'd have a coach with no toilet on. So the lads would bring bins on. Bins and the people were shitting in the bins and fans were like coming up. What's that smell? There's a bin there. Billy Priest, the matter of his kick. Just mad stuff. Yeah. Mad stuff.
Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, no regrets.
No regrets?
Not a single regret. Like I say, even the spinning ball thing that didn't last long. Fucking amazing time. Loved it. No regrets, no.
Well, mate, from our point of view, absolutely loved having you on. And I hope everybody sees the other side that we know about Jono.
I appreciate it. Loved it. Top men. Thanks.
Pleasure, pal.
Cheers, boys. Thank you very much.
More money than Big Sam, you know.
And he got it.
But this is a better podcast than Big Sam. That's why.